This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Reading by Brad Bush. North of Boston by Robert Frost. Part 1. To EMF, this book of people. The pasture. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away, and wait to watch the water clear I may. I shan't be gone long. You come, too. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by the mother. It's so young, it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come, too. Contents. Mending wall. The death of the hired man. The mountain. 100 collars. Home burial. The black cottage. Blueberries. A servant to servants. After apple picking. The code. The generations of men. The housekeeper. The fear. The self-seeker. The woodpile. And good hours. Mending wall. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it, and spills the upper boulders in the sun, and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I've come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone. But they would have the rabbit out hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring mending time we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go. To each the boulders that have fallen to each. And some are loaves, and some are so nearly balls we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There, where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I had asked to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he say it for himself. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me. Not of woods only and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well he says it again. Good fences make good neighbors. The Death of the Hired Man. Mary sat musing on the lamp flame at the table, waiting for Warren. When she heard his step, she ran on tiptoe down the darkened passage to meet him in the doorway with the news and put him on his guard. Silas is back. She pushed him outward with her through the door and shut it after her. Be kind, she said. She took the market things from Warren's arms and set them on the porch, then drew him down to sit beside her on the wooden steps. When was I anything but kind to him? But I'll not have the fellow back, he said. I told him so last hang, didn't I? If he left then, I said, that ended it. What good is he? Who else will harbor him at his age for the little he can do? What help he is, there's no depending on. Off he goes always when I need him the most. He thinks he ought to earn a little pay, enough at least to buy tobacco with, so he won't have to go beg and be beholden. All right, I say, I can't afford to pay any fixed wages, though I wish I could. Someone else can, and someone else will have to. I shouldn't mind this bettering himself, if that was what it was. You can be certain that he begins like that, there's someone at him trying to coax him off with pocket money. In hang time, when any help is scarce. In winter, he comes back to us. I'm done. Shh, not so loud. He'll hear you, Mary said. I want him to. He'll have to soon or late. He's worn out. He's asleep beside the stove. When I came up from Rose, I found him here, huddled against the barn door, fast asleep. A miserable sight, and frightening, too. You needn't smile. I didn't recognize him. I wasn't looking for him, and he's changed. Wait till you see. Where did you say he'd been? He didn't say. I dragged him to the house, and gave him tea, and tried to make him smoke. I tried to make him talk about his travels. Nothing would do. He just kept nodding off. What did he say? Did he say anything? But little. Anything? Mary, confess. He said he'd come to ditch the meadow for me. Warren? But he did. I just want to know. Of course he did. What would you have him say? Surely you wouldn't grudge the poor old man some humble way to save his self-respect. He added, if you really care to know, he meant to clear the upper pasture too. That sounds like something you have heard before. Warren, I wish you could have heard the way he jumbled everything. I stopped to look two or three times, he made me feel so queer, to see if he was talking in his sleep. He ran on Harold Wilson, you remember, the boy you had hang 4 years since. He's finished school and teaching in his college. Silas declares you'll have to get him back. He says they too will make a team for work. Between them they will lay this farm as smooth. The way he mixed that in with other things. He thinks young Wilson a likely lad, though daft on education. You know how they fought all through July under the blazing sun, Silas up on the cart to build the load on, Harold along beside to pitch it on. Yes, I took care to keep well out of earshot. Will those days trouble Silas like a dream? You wouldn't think they would. How some things linger. Harold's young college boy's assurance piqued him. After so many years, he still keeps finding good arguments he sees he might have used. I sympathize. I know just how he feels to think of the right things to say too late. Harold's associated in his mind with Latin. He asked me what I thought of Harold saying he studied Latin like violin because he liked it. That an argument? He said he couldn't make the boy believe he could find water with a hazel prong, which showed how much good school had ever done him. He wanted to go over that, but most of all, he thinks if he could have another chance to teach him how to build a load of hay. I know that Silas won accomplishment. He bundles every forkful in its place and tags and numbers it for future reference so he can find it and easily dislodge it in the unloading. Silas does that well. He takes it out in bunches like big birds' nests. You never see him standing on the hay he's trying to lift, straining to lift himself. He thinks if he could teach him that, he'd be some good perhaps to someone in the world. He hates to see a boy the fool of books. Poor Silas, so concerned for other folk, and nothing to look backward to with pride, and nothing to look forward to with hope. So now, and never any different. Part of a moon was falling down the west, dragging the whole sky with it to the hills. Its light poured softly in her lap. She saw and spread the apron to it. She put out her hand among the harp-like morning glory strings, taut with the dew from the garden's bed to eaves, as if she played unheard the tenderness that wrought on the bedside beside her in the night. "Warren," she said, "he has come home to die. You needn't be afraid he'll leave you this time." "Home?" he mocked gently. "Yes. What else but home? It all depends on what you mean by home. Of course he's nothing to us any more than the hound that came a stranger to us out of the woods, worn out upon the trail. Home's the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you know, somehow haven't to deserve." Warren leaned out and took a step or two, picked up a stick and brought it back, and broke it in his hand and tossed it by. "Silas has better claim on us, you think, than on his brother. 13 little miles as the road winds would bring him to his door. Silas has walked that far, no doubt, today. Why didn't he go there? His brother's rich. A someday director in the bank? He never told us that. We know it, though. I think his brother ought to help, of course. I'll see to that if there is need. He ought of right to take him in, and might be willing to. He may be better than appearances. But have some pity on Silas. Do you think if he'd had any pride in claiming kin or anything he looked for from his brother, he'd keep so still about him all this time? I wonder what's between them. I can tell you, Silas is what he is. We wouldn't mind him, but just the kind of kinsfolks can't abide. He never did a thing so very bad. He don't know why he isn't quite as good as anyone. He won't be made ashamed to please his brother, worthless though he is. I can't think Si ever hurt anyone. No, but he hurt my heart the way he lay and rolled his head on that sharp-edged chair back. He wouldn't let me put him on the lounge. You must go in and see what you can do. I made the bed up for him there tonight. You'll be surprised at him, how much he's broken. His working days are done, I'm sure of it. I'd not be in a hurry to say that. I haven't been. Go look for yourself. But Warren, please remember how he is. He's come to help you ditch the meadow. He has a plan. You mustn't laugh at him. He may not speak of it, and then he may. I'll sit and see if that small sailing cloud will hit or miss the moon. It hit the moon. Then there were three there, making a dim row. The moon, the little silver cloud, and she. Warren returned, too soon it seemed to her. Slipped to her side, caught up her hand, and waited. Warren? She questioned. Dead, was all he answered. The mountain. The mountain held the town, as in a shadow. I saw so much before I slept there once. I noticed that I missed the stars in the west, where its black body cut into the sky. Near me, it seemed. I felt it like a wall behind which I was sheltered from a wind. And yet, between the town and it, I found, when I walked forth at dawn to see new things, were fields, a river, and beyond more fields. The river, at the time, was fallen away, and made a widespread brawl on cobblestones. But the signs showed what it had done in spring. Good grassland gullied out, and in the grass ridges of sand and driftwood stripped of bark. I crossed the river and swung around the mountain. And there I met a man who moved so slow with white-faced oxen in a heavy cart, it seemed no hand to stop him altogether. "What town is this?" I asked. "This? Lindbergh." Then I was wrong. The town of my sojourn, beyond the bridge, was not that of the mountain, but only felt at night its shadowy presence. "Where is your village? Very far from here?" "There is no village, only scattered farms. We were but 60 voters last election." We can't in nature grow to many more. That thing takes all the room. He moved his goad. The mountain stood there to be pointed at. Pastures ran up the side a little way, and then there was a wall of trees with trunks. After that, only tops of trees and cliffs imperfectly concealed among the leaves. A dry ravine emerged from under boughs into the pasture. That looks like a path. Is that the way to reach the top from here? Not for this morning, but for some other time. I must be getting back to breakfast now. I don't advise your trying from this side. There is no proper path, but those that have been up, I understand, have climbed from lads. That's 5 miles back. You can't mistake the place. They logged it last winter, some way up. I'd take you, but I'm bound the other way. You've never climbed it? I've been on both sides, deer hunting and trout fishing. There's a brook that starts up on it somewhere. I've heard say right up on the top, tip-top, a curious thing. But what would interest you about the brook? It's always cold in summer, warm in winter. One of the great sights to see is it stream in the winter like an ox's breath, until the bushes all along its banks are inch deep with the frosty spines and bristles. You know the kind. Then let the sun shine on it. There ought to be a view around the world from such a mountain, if it isn't wooded clear to the top. I saw through leafy screens great granite terraces in the sun and shadow, shelves one could rest a knee on getting up, with depths behind him sheer 100 feet, or turn and sit on and look out and down, with little ferns and crevices at his elbow. As to that I can't say, but there's the spring, right on the summit, almost like a fountain. That ought to be worth seeing. If it's there, you never saw it? I guess there's no doubt about its being there. I never saw it. It may be right on the very top. It wouldn't have to be a long way down to have some head of water from above, and a good distance down might not be noticed by anyone who'd come a long way up. One time I asked a fellow climbing it to look and tell me later how it was. What did he say? He said there was a lake somewhere in Ireland on a mountaintop. But a lake's different. What about the spring? He never got up high enough to see. That's why I don't advise your trying this side. He tried this side. I've always meant to go and look myself, but you know how it is. It doesn't seem so much to climb a mountain you've worked around the foot of all your life. What would I do? Go in my overalls with a big stick, the same as when the cows haven't come down to the bars at milking time? Or with a shotgun for a stray black bear? 'Twouldn't seem real to climb for climbing it. I shouldn't climb it if I didn't want to, not for the sake of climbing. What's its name? We call it Hoar. I don't know if that's right. Can one walk around it? Would it be too far? You can drive round and keep in Lunenburg, but it's as much as ever you can do. The boundary lines keep in so close to it. Hoar is the township, and the township's Hoar, and a few houses sprinkled round the foot like boulders broken off the upper cliff, rolled out a little farther than the rest. Warm in December, cold in June, you say? I don't suppose the water's changed at all. You and I know enough to know it's warm compared with cold, and cold compared with warm. But all the fun's in how you say a thing. You've lived here all your life? Ever since Hoar was no bigger than a... What? I did not hear. He drew the oxen toward him with light touches of his slim goad on nose and offside flank, gave them their marching orders, and was moving. 100 collars. Lancaster bore him. Such a little town, such a great man. It doesn't see him often of late years, though he keeps the old homestead and sends the children down there with their mother to run wild in the summer, a little wild. Sometimes he joins them for a day or two, and sees old friends he somehow can't get near. They meet him in the general store at night, preoccupied with formidable mail, rifling a printed letter as he talks. They seem afraid. He wouldn't have it so. Though a great scholar, he's a Democrat, if not at heart, at least in principle. Lately, when coming up to Lancaster, his train being late, he missed another train and had 4 hours to wait in Woodsville Junction after 11 o'clock at night. Too tired to think of sitting such an ordeal out, he turned to the hotel to find a bed. No room, the night clerk said, unless Woodsville's a place of shrieks and wondering lamps and cars that shook and rattle and one hotel. You say unless you wouldn't mind sharing a room with someone else. Who is it? A man. So I should hope. What kind of man? I know him. He's all right. A man's a man. Separate beds, of course, you understand. The night clerk blinked his eyes and dared him on. Who's that man sleeping in the office chair? Has he had the refusal of my chance? He was afraid of being robbed or murdered. What do you say? I'll have to have a bed. The night clerk led him up 3 flights of stairs and down a narrow passage full of doors. At the last was one which he knocked and entered. "Leif, here's a fellow wants to share your room. Show him this way. I'm not afraid of him. I'm not so drunk I can't take care of myself." The night clerk clapped a bedstead on the foot. "This will be yours. Good night," he said and went. Leif was the name, I think. "Yes, Lafayette. You got that right the first time. And yours?" "Magoon, Dr. Magoon." "A doctor?" "Well, a teacher." "Professor, square the circle till you're tired. Hold on, there's something I don't think of now that I had on my mind to ask the first man that knew anything I happened in with. I'll ask you later. Don't let me forget." The doctor looked at Leif and looked away. A man? A brute? Naked above the waist. He sat there, creased and shining in the light, fumbling the buttons in a well-starched shirt. "I'm moving into a size larger shirt. I felt mean lately. Mean's no name for it. I just found what the matter was tonight. I've been a-choking like a nursery tree when it outgrows the wire band of its name tag. I blamed it on the hot spell we've been having. 'Twas nothing but my foolish hanging back, not liking to own up I'd grown a size." "Number 18, that is. What size do you wear?" The doctor caught his throat convulsively. "14. 14. 14, so you say? I can remember when I wore 14. And come to think, I must have back at home more than 100 collars size 14. Too bad to waste them all. You ought to have them. They're yours and welcome. Let me send them to you. What makes you stand there on one leg like that? You're not much further than where Kike left you. You act as though you wished you hadn't come. Sit down or lie down, friend. You make me nervous." The doctor made a subdued dash for it and propped himself at bay against a pillow. "Not that way with your shoes on Kike's white bed. You can't rest that way. Let me pull off your shoes. Don't touch me, please, I say. Don't touch me, please. I'll not be put to bed by you, man." "Just as you say. Have it your own way, then. My man, is it? You talk like a professor. Speaking of who's afraid of who, however, I'm thinking I have more to lose than you if anything should happen to be wrong. Who wants to cut your number 14 throat? Let's have a showdown as an evidence of good faith. There is $90. Come, if you're not afraid." "I'm not afraid. There's 5. That's all I carry." "I can search you." "Where are you moving over to? Stay still. You better tuck your money under you and sleep on it the way I always do when I'm with people I don't trust at night. Will you believe me if I put it there, right on the counterpane, that I do trust you?" "You'd say so, Mr. Man. I'm a collector. My 90 isn't mine. You won't think that. I pick it up $1 at a time all around the country for the Weekly News, published in Bow. You know the Weekly News?" "Known it since I was young. Then you know me. Now we are getting to get on together, talking. I'm sort of something for it at the front. My business is to find what people want. They pay for it, and so they ought to have it. Fairbanks, he says to me, he's editor. Feel out the public sentiment, he says. A good deal comes on me when all is said. The only trouble is we disagree in politics. I'm Vermont Democrat. You know what that is, sort of double-dyed. The News has always been Republican. Fairbanks, he says to me, help us this year, meaning us, their ticket. No, I says, I can't and I won't. You've been in long enough. It's time you turned around and boosted us. You'll have to pay me more than 10 a week if I'm expected to elect Bill Taft. I doubt if I could do it anyway. You seem to shape the paper's policy. You see, I'm with everybody. Know 'em all.
I almost know their farms as well as they do.
You drive around? It must be pleasant work. It's business, but I can't say it's not fun. What I like best is the lay of different farms. coming out of them from the stretch of woods, or over a hill, or round a sudden corner. I like to find the folks getting out in spring, raking the dooryard, working near their house. Later, they've got out further in the fields. Everything's shut sometimes, except the barn. The family's all away in some back meadow. There's hay loading a-coming when it comes, and later still, they all get driven in. The fields are stripped to lawn, the garden patches stripped to bare ground, the apple trees to whips and poles. There's nobody about. The chimney, though, keeps up a good brisk smoking. And I lie back and ride. I take the reins only when someone's coming, and the mare stops when she likes. I tell her when to go. I spoiled Jemima in more ways than one. She's got so that she turns in every house as if she had some sort of curvature, no matter if I have no errand there. She thinks I'm sociable. I am, maybe. It's seldom I get down, except for meals, though. Folks entertain me from the kitchen doorstep, all in a family row down to the youngest. One would suppose that they might not be as glad to see you as you are to see them. Oh, because I want their dollar? I don't want anything they've not got. I never done. I'm there, and they can pay me if they like. I go nowhere on purpose. I happen by. Sorry there's no cup to give you a drink. I drink out of the bottle, not your style. Mayn't I offer you? No, thank you. Just as you say, here's looking at you then, and now I'm leaving you a little while. You'll rest easier when I'm gone, perhaps. Lie down, let yourself go, and get some sleep. But first, let's see, what was I going to ask you? Those collars, who shall I address them to? Suppose you aren't awake when I come back. Really, friend, I can't let you. You may need them. Not till I shrink, when they'll be out of style. But really, I have so many collars. I don't know who I rather would have them. They're only turning yellow where they are. But you're the doctor, as the saying is. I'll put the light out. Don't you wait for me. I've just begun the night. You get some sleep. I'll knock so fashion and peep round the door when I come back so you know who it is. There's nothing I'm afraid of like scared people. I don't want you should shoot me in the head. What am I doing carrying off this bottle? There now, you get some sleep. He shut the door. The doctor slid a little down the pillow. End of part 1.